This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
If Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Okay, we are joined now by Hale McGranahan from the ClemsonInsider.com. We actually had Hale on last year to talk about the game before last year, and I think he was very realistic going into last year's game. Had a lot to say about where Clemson was going into last year's game. So I'm very interested in hearing what Hale has to say this year. So welcome back to the podcast, Hale. Good to have you with us, and welcome to the Clemson side.
Appreciate it, Jason. Glad to be back with you. It's good to hear from you again, and certainly looking forward to another Clemson-Florida State battle.
Yeah, it should be a little more interesting maybe than we thought as many as, 4 or 5 hours before we started recording this podcast. Quite a bit has changed with Jameis Winston being suspended for the first half, and you know I'll do a separate podcast. Actually, I've got one that I'm going to be recording shortly after this, specifically on that. But suffice to say, I think Florida State made the right decision there. That something needed to be done there, and but that does obviously change the way that this game looks, changes the complexion of the game. So coming in, obviously, Clemson. People are looking at Clemson a little differently than they did coming into the year, largely because of the final score of that Georgia game. But in my view, actually, as I looked closely at that Georgia game, I spent some time going through the tape last night. Clemson, I think, was very close to blowing that game open in the second quarter, early third quarter, and it really could have gone the other way very easily. That score could have gone the other way, and I think Clemson was basically in a position to do that and just missed a couple opportunities. And it wasn't until very late. I mean, people forget that game was 24-21 with about 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. It was still a very close game, still a hotly contested game, and then all of a sudden it got broken open. So that's something that I think a lot of people are forgetting. This is a good Clemson team. From the Clemson side, What are you hearing? What is your impression of sort of where this team sits two games in, really a game and a scrimmage in, coming into this game in Tallahassee?
I think it's probably somewhere along the lines of kind of what you were saying. I think the team as a whole felt really pretty good about where things stood through the first three quarters or so down there in Athens. And as you said, the dam kind of gave away, and Levy Broke and Todd Gurley and Nick Chubb and all those guys just kind of had their way and just kind of ran a rough shot through a really tired Clemson defense there in the fourth quarter, because Clemson offense just couldn't really put much of anything together there in the second half. So really the guys on the defensive side of the ball were pretty gassed there late in the fourth quarter. Because they spent a lot of time on the field. So I don't think the final score of the Georgia game is indicative of how well the team as a whole played. And I think that's kind of the, I don't know if rallying cry is the right way to describe it, but I think that's kind of the mentality that this group has, is like, hey, you know, for about a half, things were all square and
three quarters, more than a half. Yeah, I mean, so and actually, if you look at that, I mean, all you have to do is go as far as Georgia's next game and go just down the road to, you know, Clemson's rivals in Columbia, mm-hmm. and look at what happens when a team gets blown out. You know, the score may not be reflective of exactly how much they got dominated. And frankly, I think Texas A&M did basically dominate South Carolina that much, but. But, you know, a team with a back, it's back against the wall all of a sudden, you know, they can become a dangerous team. So that's something I'm really interested to see the dynamic of in terms of Clemson there. I felt like Tavares Barnes going down was the watershed moment for that game. They just could not hold up front once he went down. And this is where the starter who was supposed to be in front of him, who was suspended for that game, Crawford, mm-hmm. is back for this game. So now you've got both of those guys back on the defensive line. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be much harder for Florida State to wear the Clemson front down than it was for Georgia in that game, partially because, you know, Clemson was shorthanded a little bit without Crawford, and partially because of just the Barnes injury in the third quarter, I think changed the whole complexion of things there.
Yeah, I think people kind of forget just how important Corey Crawford's been to the rotation along that defensive line over the last few years. And I think we saw that late in the fourth quarter when they were a little bit thinned out along the defensive line. Those guys were probably playing some of those guys were probably playing a few more snaps than they have in the past, and I think that might have contributed to some of the issues they had. But I think the biggest thing was Georgia was able to take advantage of Clemson's young defensive backs and really make those guys try to tackle along the perimeter when Georgia was running all those toss sweep plays to the right, and just making those young cornerbacks, a couple young safeties, really have to, you know, prove their worth and be better than some people might have anticipated. Because Clemson's strength, maybe on this team as a whole, is that defensive line. So they're late in that game. Georgia kind of went away from that and really challenged that youthful secondary. So yeah, all that being said, I think Clemson, now that they'll have everybody back along the defensive line and those young guys in the secondary have a little more experience under their belt, maybe they won't have as many problems late in the game against Florida State as they did against Georgia. But all that comes back to the offense for Clemson being able to sustain some drives and not go three and out and not only have one first down in an entire half like they did in the second half against Georgia.
Yeah, and the other thing that I thought happened in the second half, I mean, a lot of people pointed to Jeremy Pruitt's defense there. I didn't think they really did much all that much differently from what they did in the first half. The biggest difference was that, you know, the average starting field position for Clemson in the second half there was somewhere around like their 18. And it's really hard to open the field up when you're backed up inside your own, in the shadow of your own goalposts, as they say. But I did feel like Clemson could have gone down the field a little bit more against Georgia in those cases, although they tried at one point and got sacked. But one thing that I'm kind of expecting to see a little bit more of Davidson and Gallman at running back than Howard in this game. I don't know if that's something that on the Clemson side you're expecting to see, but I thought those guys showed a little bit more power and explosiveness than Howard did in that first game, even though they're a little younger. So
yeah, at running back, you'll probably see some CJ Davidson. He'll probably get most of his looks. Well, I don't want to say most of his looks, but he'll probably be the guy who gets the goal line and short yardage type of carries, because they kind of went in that direction with him last year before he got injured, and he did that a little bit. He's done that a little bit so far this season. You mentioned Gallman. He's going to get more touches. And Adam Choice, another freshman, a true freshman running back, will probably get a fair amount of touches as well. He didn't get any carries against Georgia, but played a significant amount against South Carolina State, and they've been really high on him to this point through preseason camp and this point of the season. So I think a combination of those three guys will probably be what we'll see from Clemson in terms of coming out of the backfield, rushing the ball.
Yeah, one of the things that when I was watching also, I actually thought that overall the receiving core, as hard as it is to believe without Sammy Watkins there, I mean, Sammy, obviously, that's a huge absence, but the rest of the receiving core was better than what I saw on tape last year going into this game in terms of athleticism, in terms of sort of what they're able to put out there, in terms of depth, some of those things. They did have some trouble with some drops. I didn't really watch the South Carolina State game. I didn't think it was worth it. But has that been a problem over the course of, you know, going back to spring and some of that? Is that a concern in terms of some of the younger guys with that level of consistency, or was that out of character? What can we expect on the Clemson side in terms of the receiving core, which, like I said, I felt like I was surprised that they were better and more athletic than what I saw from them last year, aside from Sammy, of course.
Yeah. I think it was a little out of character, I guess, with the drops. And Mike Williams, number 7, had a few against Georgia.
Yeah, I think he had 3.
Yeah. And I know the coaches think an awful lot about him and his ability to catch the ball and do all those kinds of things. But to answer your question, yeah, I think it was a little out of character. I don't think that's something they're all that concerned with. Another one of their starters, Adam Humphreys, is a guy they've talked about since he stepped foot on campus day one in 2011. Is probably got the best set of hands on the team. It's not an issue there with him.
I don't think I've seen him drop a punt, let alone a pass. So
what he has actually had. It's funny you mentioned that. He has had a couple of issues with punt returns, namely in the South Carolina game. One of which was his fault, but either way, I don't think drops are really something that is as much of a concern. Sharon Peake's pretty steady. He's been pretty steady in that department over his career. And with some of the younger guys like Octavius Scott and Damari Kitt, I don't think they're really worried about those guys' ability to actually make the catch. I don't think that's a big concern for these guys heading into Saturday night.
Yeah, so let's think then about some of the matchups then, about what on the Clemson side might be some concerns moving into what they're looking at from Florida State. What are the concerns on the Clemson side?
I think if you talk to any Clemson fan, the biggest concern when you talk about matchups against a team like Florida State is going to be, how is Clemson's offensive line going to hold up? And there's been this long-running knock that some folks have had against the Clemson offensive line. Right or wrong, I think some people are just kind of wish that it was like it was back in the 80s, when they were just a big, physical, nasty bunch of guys. And for some folks, Clemson hasn't had that since the Danny Ford era. I think this offensive line is probably a little better than most people have given them credit. Isaiah Battle, left tackle, is probably one of the most talented offensive linemen that Clemson's had in several years. To his right at left guard has been mostly David Beasley, a multi-year starter. But there's senior Reed Webster, who's really pushed and gotten some playing time. Played a significant amount against Georgia when Beasley was suspended.
Yeah, and that getting him back is a pretty significant deal, because one of the places that Clemson really, really struggled was in long yardage situations. Georgia was able to go to a two-man front and sort of bring pressure from both A-gaps, so each side of the center. And Clemson really had a hard time picking that particular look up, that, you know, somebody was usually coming free through the A gap, which, you know, last year, most of the trouble that Clemson had against Florida State, which was obviously, you know, again, that was a Pruitt defense then, was from the perimeter, bringing pressure from Joyner and from, you know, maybe a linebacker off the edge. A lot of times the field blitzes, they did a little bit differently this time, bringing stuff up the A gaps, and putting some pressure straight up the middle on Stout, which I got to give Stout credit. I think that with both quarterbacks at this point, as odd as it is to say, I think actually these quarterbacks for Clemson in many respects are ahead of where Taj Boyd was in how they respond to pressure, from what I saw from them. You know, there was one really poor throw that wound up in an interception from Stout, but and Watson missed a read in the early third quarter. But other than that, I felt like they actually played well enough to win. But they were giving up a lot of pressure, particularly on third and long from that sort of flexible defensive look and bring in pressure straight up the middle. Is that something they expect to change? Is that something you've sort of heard with the change at center and other things, and perhaps they've spent some time specifically going over that? What seems to have been going on there?
They've had to deal with a lot of different, I guess, mixing and matching type of things going on in terms of figuring out how they want to place the personnel. Like I mentioned, Beasley, they suspended him for the opener, so they had to figure out who was going to play left guard. They had the center situation kind of figured out with Ryan Norton, who was a starter there last year, and Jay Guillermo was a backup, and Guillermo actually started against South Carolina State because Norton was sick. But Norton's played some at guard. He played some at guard during the spring and preseason camp, and Kalon Davis was at right guard, has been a right guard. He's played mostly at left guard during his career. I think they're probably going to start, if I had to guess, it'd be Beasley, Norton, and Davis going left to right, guard, center, guard.
So pretty significantly different lineup than what we saw against Georgia, obviously.
Yeah, obviously with Beasley being suspended. Yeah, sure. And he's been a pretty good, I would say, pretty good during his career at left guard. And I would think that the coaches at Clemson probably feel most comfortable with that trio right there in the middle.
And obviously, you know, one of the things that has been hovering since the beginning of the season, really, I mean, before the season, has been Watson's presence, you know, being the top dual threat quarterback coming out of high school, a guy who has all the tools you could ask for. I mean, without question, you know, played in a similar offense in high school. So, you know, came in the spring, you know, got a head start with that, in a position to really contribute. But, you know, Cole Stout has largely held him off to really be the guy so far. And actually, I was just in a text exchange with a friend of mine who is now on faculty at Clemson, who was complaining that, you know, they hadn't gone to Watson just yet. And that seems to be the sentiment among a lot of Clemson fans. I'm a little bit less sold on the need to make a move to Watson right away. I suspect they'll have some a little bit more time for him in the Florida State game than they did the Georgia game. But I'm not sure I'd want to stick him out there as the starter when I've got a guy like Stout. But what's your feeling on this whole quarterback situation there as it stands?
Well, you're definitely right about what you perceive is what Clemson fans are thinking about the quarterback situation. I would venture to guess that a vast majority of Clemson fans right now are ready for Deshaun Watson to start and play every snap at quarterback. And like you said, Cole Stout hasn't done anything to lose his job. I mean, he's thrown one touchdown pass and one interception. He's completed 63% of his passes, and while most of them have been very short to intermediate throws, he's still managing the offense just fine. He managed it for the most part pretty well against Georgia. While Watson did come on for that first series and lead the team down to a touchdown and had some really nice throws in the process.
Yeah, that touchdown throw was beautiful.
That was I asked the defensive coordinator Brent Venables about Deshaun Watson, and while he didn't want to go into too much detail about it, he referred to the pass as a BB, that touchdown pass, it's nice a ball you can throw. So
the thing that stuck out to me is that was a very confident throw from a young quarterback, and that's one of the things I look for, is to see the level of anticipation that a young player has and whether he confidently just guns it in there with anticipation when he sees something. And I saw that from him. So, I mean, I think that's something that, you know, bodes very well for him in the future at Clemson.
Yeah, and even though it was a small sample size, it's got a lot of people really anxious to see what he can do on a full-time basis. And that, keep going back to that touchdown pass, I mean, if memory serves me correctly, there was a Peak had a safety over the top and had a linebacker covering kind of underneath, and the linebacker's back was to Watson. And by the time Peak had the ball in his hands, the linebacker's looking back to make a play on the ball, and Peak's scoring six. So it was, yeah, and talk about anticipation and just timing and all that kind of stuff. It was a pretty play, very pretty play, and I think that's really kind of what sparked this whole great quarterback debate and kind of pushed the conversation over these last few weeks. And certainly will be interesting to see how much Watson plays and how much Stout plays on Saturday.
Yeah, so what is, you know, as we start to sort of wrap up here, what is your overall expectation then as you're coming into this game? I mean, obviously the Winston thing changes, you know, a lot of what, you know, we were talking before we started recording. It obviously changes so much in terms of what we might expect. I mean, to the point of some of our stuff that we've just done is almost obsolete.
Yeah.
And also, is there anything before we get to that, is there anything that from the Clemson side, I'm sure that there's some questions that the Clemson side would probably have with regard to where Florida State's at this point. Is there anything you guys might want to know on the Florida State side?
I guess my big question is, aside from Rashad Greene, obviously we saw what Kelvin Benjamin did last year throughout the season, and of course against Clemson, but aside from Rashad Greene, of course, Nick O'Leary, I mean, who was the next target, I should say, in the passing game for Sean McGuire, then in the second half, Jameis Winston, after Greene and O'Leary, who would you say are the – is it Kermit Whitfield? Is he kind of the main
I would say it's Bobo Wilson, Jesus
okay.
Wilson.
Or, yeah.
I think he is – you know, he was suspended for the first game, but he is, I think, a clear – number two receiver for them. He's a very different kind of receiver than Benjamin, obviously, who was just a freak, you know, with a huge catch radius. And, you know, he could bail Winston out a little bit sometimes just by going up and getting balls that, you know, you could just throw it up to him. Wilson's a different kind of player. He's more of a, when I see him, there's a little bit of if you remember Santana and Senorice Moss for Miami.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of that kind of player. He's maybe not quite as tightly wound as Santana was, but he's the kind of player, or Steve Smith, I guess, for the Carolina Panthers now with, mm-hmm. I guess, was he with the Jets?
The Ravens.
The Ravens, that's right. But yeah, he's a kind of a Steve Smith kind of player where, you know, he's a really quick twitch guy. He's about 5'9", but really well-built, strong, solid kid. And extremely smooth and very, very quick acceleration kind of guy where, you know, you watch him come off the line and, you know, he's flying without effort. So he's one of those guys he's more of a run after the catch or run by you guy than where you have, Benjamin, who's more of a, he's more of a post up kind of guy. Mm-hmm. So, that's basically who I expect to be the number two guy over the course of the year is Wilson. They're also going to have Christian Greene, who's a former five-star recruit. He's a redshirt senior. He sort of just fell off. He had a good redshirt freshman year. He came in as a quarterback actually, but was a five-star athlete coming out of high school, expecting to be a wide receiver. He fell off after that first year. He had about just under 500 yards receiving as a redshirt freshman, and then just sort of lost confidence, got buried on the depth chart, and then all of a sudden he's reemerged. Had a good first game, a little bit of a middling second game here against the Citadel, but he's probably the best blocker among the Florida State receivers at this point, which is going to keep him on the field. And he's athletic, has, you know, a little bit of inconsistency, but he's about 6'2", 210, and he'll be really the number four guy out there. So you're going to have Rashad Greene, obviously. You're going to have Nick O'Leary. And what Florida State will do a lot of times is they'll put those two guys on the same side of the field, so you can't really double both of them. And then you'll have Wilson and Christian Greene on the other side of the field when they go four wide. They've got some freshmen that will also play. They've got, you know, Kermit Whitfield, who will play in the slot, and they'll put him in the backfield and they'll use his speed. He's probably the fastest player in the country. He and Tyreek Hill from Oklahoma State are probably the two fastest players in the country. But Kermit's really not a natural receiver. He's learning to play the position. He's a good football player. You know, he catches pretty well, but he's not the natural kind of receiver that Bobo Wilson is, for example, where you watch Wilson play and you go, yeah, that guy, he does everything so easily. Kermit is just, he's insanely fast. And so you want to just get him the ball where he has a chance to run. And they'll do that. They'll run him on some jet sweeps, fly sweeps, and move him around just to use his speed. But it's a different kind of passing offense this year, I think, than what you had last year, where last year you could sort of throw it up vertically to Benjamin and do more with that. This year you've got more guys that are either going to the threat is to run by you or to catch something short and go. And so you're going to have a little bit of a different kind of challenge from that. I actually am looking forward to seeing Mackenzie Alexander at corner for Clemson matching up against some of these smaller, quicker receivers from Florida State, because I think that'll be a really interesting strength on strength matchup there to see how Clemson how Clemson matches up there, how much faith they put in him in one on one, and whether or not he's able to hold his own there, because obviously he's got a lot of talent at that position. So any other stuff on the Clemson side? Any questions?
I guess a guy that. Staying on that side of the ball, a guy that the Clemson fans are pretty familiar with, Dalvin Cook, was committed to Clemson for about 10 months. How's he progressed since, I guess, what he got there in January, and now two games in, how's he coming along?
He has looked every bit of the five-star prospect. That probably hurts Clemson fans to hear a little bit, He actually got his first carries against the Citadel and was shoestrings away from breaking about four of them for scores. The Citadel basically played a shell, a defensive shell where they tried to force everything back inside and kept everybody over top in the secondary to try to prevent big plays. And still, he was just a shoelace from going about four times. You can see he's just got elite level acceleration. He's a one cut kind of back where stick the foot in the ground and just go. And all of a sudden, he just bursts. He's got a little ways to go in terms of developing in the passing game, but seems to have the protections by and large down and is a really instinctive zone runner, which is, going to be very important going forward. He is third on the depth chart, because of Carlos Williams, and Mario Pender, both of whom have looked good so far. Williams has not been quite as good as expectations so far, but part of that was because the offensive line did not play all that well against Oklahoma State. So, he did well getting back to the line of scrimmage on a number of cases and that because of just flat out whiffs. He's a really good player. He's somebody that they're going to be able to ride a good bit down the line, and certainly is one of the fastest backs in the country. I don't think there's any question about that.
All right, sir. Well, that's probably the main questions I've heard from Clemson fans that are looking to me for answers. So. I appreciate you.
Yeah, and just in terms of game plan, by the way, I'll give you one extra thing. One thing I expect in terms of the first half, a lot of people might expect that Florida State comes out and really focuses on the running game in the first half with McGuire at quarterback. I am expecting, and given the familiarity level between Venables and Fisher here, I would expect Venables knows this too. I'm expecting Florida State to come out and throw, if maybe a little bit more on first down with McGuire in the game than they would have with Winston, because of the Fisher's philosophy is to protect his quarterbacks by throwing when it's easiest. McGuire has a strong arm. He's a little, his release has a little bit of a, it's not quite as quick as what would be ideal. He doesn't move as well as Winston. But he does know the offense. He throws fairly well downfield, and I'm expecting them to come out you know, sort of guns blazing in that first half. So if I'm Venables, I'm expecting that and trying to, you know, maybe bait him into some throws on first down. It'd be interesting to see that chess match, but I expect to see them. You know, the Florida State side is pretty comfortable in what they've got in McGuire at this point. It'll be interesting to see sort of the chess match, particularly on first down early in the game with that. So that's just one other piece. So let's go ahead and then wrap up sort of with what we expect in terms of this game. What are you expecting? And now that we've got the suspension, now that we're midweek, what are you sort of expecting as we go into this game?
Well, yesterday I said that I thought Florida State would win, cover the 20-point spread that was on the board. I said 45-21 was about the numbers of points I was looking at, and I said that with the caveat that I didn't think that score would be reflective or indicative of the just how close the game was, kind of like it was for Clemson against Georgia. Now that all that stuff's happened with Jameis, and we know that he's not going to be playing in the first half, I'm not going to make any kind of radical adjustments and say that, oh, well, Clemson's going to win now. I still think Florida State will win the game. Obviously, I'll probably adjust my final numbers and make it a little bit closer, probably less than 20. So I'll say around 35-21 in that range. I think Florida State, just across the board, talent-wise, is, I want to say, far superior to Clemson, but I think it's significant enough to where they should win the game by at least two scores. I think Florida State should.
Yeah, you may actually be a little bit more pessimistic about Clemson's chances this year than I am. I do think that Florida State has a talent advantage, and in particular up front, which is where I always start. You know, that's where the game is usually won and lost, is up front and at the quarterback position. And I do think Florida State has an edge, particularly if you're comparing offensive lines. Florida State's offensive line is a better offensive line than what Clemson has, and I think that's a big difference. But you know, I don't think that it's gonna. I don't think we're looking at last year's game. I don't think that even before Winston was suspended for the first half, I didn't think that this would be a game where, you know, Florida State last year was able to really put it on Clemson right away, early in the game, and get them reeling, and that game was over really in the second quarter. I really don't expect that. I didn't expect that even if Winston played. I'm seeing a game that looks a lot like the 2012 game. That's what I'm expecting. Where, you know, Clemson may be even ahead at the half, and that may be even more true now. I do think that they kind of run out of gas a little bit, particularly up front again. Not quite like they did with Georgia, but I figure it's probably, you know, maybe a 14-point game is probably about right. And I think there probably probably some extra points scored in this game compared to what people expect. You know, both teams coming off a bye. You know, the Chad will have a few things in, I'm sure, that won't have been seen so far. So I'm expecting, you know, maybe 38-24, 30, you know, somewhere in there, 38-28 kind of thing. I wouldn't be surprised if we see that kind of game where, you know, maybe it's, you know, 17 all or 21-17 or so at the half, something like that. Be interesting to see. I'm also curious to see the tempo of this game. I'm curious to see how much Clemson decides to push it, whether FSU pushes tempo at all, because how many drives is going to determine a lot, I think, in terms of the game as well. So, be interesting.
It will, and kind of to your point, I don't see Clemson doing anything to slow down the tempo of when they've got the ball. That's Chad Morse's calling card. That's why Dabo brought him to Clemson to go as fast as humanly possible.
That said, they did not go as fast against Georgia as they have in the past. They seemed to, you know, especially through the first, you know, through good portion of that game, I would say most of the first half, they were in sort of a middle pace. They didn't really hit warp, but a couple times.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was part of what Morris talked about after the game, particularly in the second half when they're, as you mentioned earlier, just pretty much in the shadows of their own goalpost. He said Morris admitted that he got a little conservative and slowed things down a little bit because they had such trouble, you know, moving the ball closer to midfield. So I don't think he's going to be looking to make that mistake again. I think he's just going to stick to the identity that got him to this point in his career and just try to move that thing and get the ball snapped as many times as possible.
All right. Well, I think that pretty much wraps us up. Thank you, Hale, for joining us again. This should be a fun weekend, regardless of the outcome. I think at this point, the ACC has earned a whole lot more respect than they've had in the past. And you know, so these games are nice to see now, knowing that you know it may not end the season, perhaps. In the way that it would before, so at least from the Florida State perspective, that's helpful as well. But yeah, it'll be interesting. Look forward to keeping up the conversation. I appreciate you joining us, Hale McGranahan from the ClemsonInsider.com. I appreciate all the analysis and insight you've given us. Should be fun on Saturday.
Jason, thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it, and looking forward to it.
And that's going to be our show. Again, I am Jason Staples. This is the Unconquer Podcast. Thanks for listening. I made this.